الله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. I begin in the name of the Almighty God, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful. And I would like to pray that God blesses all of you and all of us here tonight by His greatest of blessings. I would like to thank all of you and all of the organizers, my dear friend, as I have met over the last few hours, Reverend Dr. Keith Small, and everyone else that has been involved in this. And hopefully we'll have a fruitful and eventful night. I'm told I have about 25 minutes to cover the misconceptions about Islam. Before getting into that, let me just make this a comment. I hope I don't face any difficulty over the course of this program tonight. But just to let you know, I have been struggling with a little bit of a cold and a delayed flight. I was supposed to arrive yesterday from Dubai, but I ended up arriving this afternoon. So I hope that with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's help, with God's mercy, we're able to continue. Before getting to the misconceptions with regards to Islam in particular, let me talk a little bit about some of what I have observed and some of what I find concerning with regards to religion and faith in general. I see a very strong movement in the world, especially through mass media, through Hollywood, and other means, that somehow is trying to combat religion and faith in general. And I think this is concerning. I don't want to talk about the motives and why this is occurring, but I see much of that. Some of the books and movies that I'm sure some of you are more familiar than I am, but I'll take an example that I think my friend here mentioned as well in an email, and that was the Da Vinci Code. There's plenty of others as well, some that talk about Christianity, others that talk about Islam, some which talk about Judaism, others which talk about faith in general, and you have some that mock and make fun of religion in its entirety, or the concept of God and belief in an unseen deity. And this is very concerning. Another area that I find there to be a concerning effort being made against religion, and hopefully I hope over the course of these 25 minutes I am able to explain why all these concerns are very important for everyone, but an area that I find very concerning is that there are certain things that religions, meaning God through the different messengers that He has sent, has tried to convey to people, to mankind, to human beings, that these are dangerous and these are behaviors that are not acceptable for a human being in order for them to have a prosperous life. And we see that these types of behaviors are being propagated, they're being advertised, and we see that the world is moving further and further away from those divine teachings. Sometimes by just propagating certain behavior that is really corruption and the spread of corruption throughout the face of the globe. For example, one of the industries that is a multi-million or maybe even multi-billion dollar industry, which is very concerning, is the pornography industry. This type of corruption is being advertised and constantly being advertised, and people are being affected by it. And to an extent where not allowing in certain countries that want to practice their religion and stay away from this, they have trouble allowing their community, allowing their society to stay away from this form of corruption. And some from within this world would refer to them as countries or governments that are being backwards, or people that are limiting the freedom of, or governments that are limiting the freedom of their people, and so on and so forth. Then we have sometimes the idea that certain forms of corruption that want to be pushed forward, that were at least at some point in time considered something that is corrupt, and I'm almost sure that in this crowd we'll have a mixed view on whether what I'm about to say is actually corruption or not. This is from a religious perspective, obviously. Something like the legalization of homosexual marriages was something that in the United States, I don't know if you read this or not, not only was this being pushed, but it was being given a religious green light to the extent that in some of the states, religious authorities like Christian priests were brought in to legalize same-sex marriages in parts of the United States of America. According to religion, at the very least, this is something that's not considered to be okay. It is something that is considered a form of corruption. So we see that just having corruption being spread throughout the globe isn't sufficient. It has to have a religious badge of approval somehow on it sometimes, and this is very concerning. Where in this day and age, if a religious person was to express their opinion with regards to same-sex marriages or even homosexuality in general, they are going to be labeled with different labels, as I'm sure some of us, or if not all, already know. So there's a move, a global move towards corruption, and there's an emphasis to try to either silence religion, silence the divine teachings and those who stand for them, and at times to even push them further, not just to remain silent, but to give approval to them. This is very concerning. This is something that I think all people of faith should be very concerned about, and make sure whatever faith we are coming from, we don't kind of step back and allow for this to come and change that religious culture that we have received from the divine scriptures that we are coming from. And I think this is something for all religious backgrounds, all faiths, to consider very important. I think it's if this is not something that people from different backgrounds of faith are going to take seriously and take action against, we will see the communities of faith decreasing and shrinking by the day. Now, particularly about Islam, I really don't know where to begin to talk about misconceptions with regards to Islam. I'll start where maybe, I don't know how many of you are familiar with, I don't know how many of you have had to deal with this. When I travel internationally, I don't wear these clothes, okay? I just wear my jeans and, you know, whatever, polo shirt or whatever. So the only way you would know I'm a Muslim is probably by my beard, okay? And, you know, after 9/11, there's been a lot of change in security in the airports. Every year it's gotten tougher and tougher. And every time we get pulled aside, they say it's random screening, okay? But I don't know why this random screening is always randomly a Muslim that's being pulled aside, or almost always a randomly Muslim that's being pulled aside. We get stopped pretty frequently at airports because for some reason people think that Muslims are inherently terrorists, people that are advocating the killing of those who are not Muslim. People have misconceptions with regards to Islam. For example, thinking that Muslims are very barbaric. I don't know how many of you, I'm throwing these things out there because I know it's out there. I don't know which ones you have come across and seen. But for example, some of the penal law of Islam. I don't know if you've seen some of those videos on YouTube where they show the stoning of, well, I don't know if they have the stoning of men as well or not, but women and men, they have the stoning of people online attributing to the Muslims. So considering the Muslims barbaric, hating everyone and wanting to kill, wanting to somehow, these jihadists as they are called, some of the simple teachings of Islam, people who are more involved with the Western society, and not being able, seeing Muslims, you know, they avoid foods, they avoid certain activities, they don't go out clubbing, they don't enjoy that type of lifestyle, they don't enjoy drinking alcoholic beverages. And one of the other things that's very concerning about the image of Islam that is portrayed is Islam's understanding or teachings with regards to women. That's one of those that's always out there. The headscarf that you see women or sisters in this audience wearing is considered a form of discrimination, a form of inferiority that the religion considers with regards to women as compared to men, and so on and so forth. So there's a very long list of misconceptions with regards to Islam that is being spread continuously. Let me maybe expand on some of that just to bring our attention to the fact that we need to be very careful when we read those newspapers or read the media or listen to the media outlets with regards to them. You have something called the 9/11 that took place in my country, in New York City, which was said to have been planned and carried out by Muslims against the United States of America. How many people, just to do the math, how many people were killed in those attacks? I'm assuming right now, I don't want to object and question the picture that was given by the United States, by the media at the time, with regards to who actually carried out the attack. There's a lot of Americans very rightfully questioning the authenticity of the story that was presented by the media with regards to 9/11. Okay, there's plenty of people that are questioning that. This is not something that is not only not limited to Muslims. I'm trying to think if I've seen a video that was produced by Muslims within America, of course, that suggests that this was something that they refer to as an inside job. All the videos and the clips and articles that I've seen actually belong to non-Muslims. So there's plenty of people that are questioning that. I'm going to leave that aside. Let's just take that figure, okay? And let's just consider that story authentic for a second here and say 3,000-something people were killed in the Twin Towers. I'll get to the idea that this is not Islamic teachings, and we need to differentiate that between Muslims and Islamic teachings. I'll get to that. But before that, let's just to understand how the media is portraying things. Have you ever come across any figure of how many people have died and are still dying in Afghanistan and in Iraq due to the invasion, the US-led invasion? Have you ever seen any figures on that? How many people actually died in that? And who's responsible for their death? Okay. If you compare the numbers of people that were killed there by the United States government, okay, you get a much larger figure compared to the figure that were killed in the Twin Towers. But people don't consider the United States government as a terrorist for some reason. And that's because the media doesn't portray it in that way. Or for example, the brutality that is attributed to the religion of Islam. Before I even get to understanding the Islamic perspective on some of these, again, to shed some light about not to trust necessarily what the media is trying to present, the United States government has got plenty of prisons within the U.S. and outside of the U.S. that they are torturing people. They actually have some of those off of U.S. soil because they don't want to maybe later on be questioned for them and maybe prosecuted for those crimes. But they conduct some very, very harsh and severe forms of torture. But for some reason, this ideology is not considered barbaric, okay? It is not portrayed as barbaric. It's portrayed as the land of freedom and a land that exports its freedom and democracy to the rest of the world, okay? So let's just open our minds and realize that much of what is being portrayed on the media is not really a correct picture of what's truly taking place, all right? Last example on that I feel obligated to mention. Usually in the West, what we hear of the, Muslim-Israeli conflict, Arab-Israeli conflict, whatever you like to call it, is again the terrorist attacks, the terrorism for which some of the movements, some of the freedom-fighting movements within the occupied lands like Hamas, for instance, and I'm just throwing out facts about these groups. I'm not supporting one group or the other. I'm just throwing out information. One of the pretexts for not supporting the Palestinian government that was voted in by the Palestinian people in Gaza was that this is a terrorist organization, Hamas is. Okay. Why? Because they have the blood of Israeli citizens on their hands. Well, have you really looked into the figures of the Israeli citizens that have been killed in the different conflicts and the Palestinian people that have been killed in the different conflicts? Why do we call one side a terrorist and barbaric and killing innocent people and the other party is not such, where according to the UN investigations, children, innocent children and women, civilians were attacked intentionally with weapons that are considered illegal, and that's absolutely fine. Or in the attack on Lebanon in 2006, this is something that was information that was out there. But the way the media portrays, again, is that, you know, there's a group of people called Muslims, and they are the ones that are supposed to be barbaric, and they are the terrorists. And anytime you hear about any form of bombings, at least in the U.S., I know it's like that. Anytime there's a bombing or killings or shootings, before anything else, you want to hear and you want to look out for the name Muhammad or something that sounds like an Islamic name. Okay, that's what's going to come out first. And sometimes we hear a different name, right? So let's just be aware of that fact. And I hope one of the things that we go away from this session with is the idea that we have a God-given intellect and we need to use it to process information. As someone said very beautifully, as much as they call this age, and we hear this age being called the age of information, I think we can call it the age of misinformation as well, all right? There's a lot of information and misinformation coming out. And the way to judge is to use that God-given intellect, and I hope we do that. Now, I think I spoke enough about what you all have probably heard with regards to Islam. All the misconceptions, covering them in even 2 hours is not something that is possible. Some of these ideas, especially, for example, with regards to the penal law of Islam, and some of the laws that are there, some of them are mentioned in the Quran. You know, these are not something that I'm going to hide or try to say it's not there. I'm not going to do that. I'm not that type of a person. If it's there, it's there. Okay. And as a religious person, as someone who believes this is actually from God, I try to understand it, and I'll give my explanation for why I think that's there, all right? Or some of the rules and regulations that we have in Islam, the laws, the special laws that women have in Islam, all right? These are matters that we discuss extensively amongst ourselves to come up with deeper and deeper understanding. So this is not something that's just for an audience that consists of Muslims and non-Muslims. So discussing these matters is going to take hours, if not days, if I would want to cover them in detail. What I'd like to say are some... I would like to give you a general outline of the Islamic thinking with some of the verses of the Holy Quran, and kind of try to show how that vision, that understanding of the world, that understanding of the universe is related to some of these laws where they are there, okay, and not the misunderstandings, and why we have them, okay. Before that, I need to mention this, which I did in passing, but I'd like to make this very clear. We should always distinguish between an ideology and those who follow the ideology. Okay, an ideology may not contain certain teachings or certain ideas, but the followers of that ideology may conduct certain actions, all right? That doesn't mean that comes from the ideology, okay? For example, something that I don't attribute to the Christian faith, genuinely I don't, because for those of you who don't know, Islam and Muslims consider Christianity a divine faith. The only thing that the Muslims, I think, or the fundamental difference between Muslims and Christians is that Muslims believe that that wasn't the final revelation, and there was supposed to be a follow-up, which was Islam, and Christians believe that that was, I guess, it, if I'm understanding it correctly. So anyhow, I firmly believe that this is not a Christian teaching, but some of the American politicians, if I remember this correctly, I'm trusting my memory on this, George W. Bush called his attack on the Middle Eastern people as a crusade, okay, something that's holy, religiously acceptable, religiously approved of. And I know others that did. I don't attribute that to Christianity or to Christian teachings. All right, that's something that someone who considers himself to be Christian is doing and conducting, and I completely disagree with that. So not everything that is done by Muslims is something that is actually Islamic, even if they claim for it to be Islamic. For example, if this person that is called Osama bin Laden, if we accept that such a person actually exists, which they probably do, but the way it's portrayed, I'm not really sure if that full story is there. But anyhow, if this guy or others who have similar ideology that believe that they should go and take weapons and start just shooting at people in the West, people who, according to them, don't have faith, for some reason deserve to die just because of that. Even if they attribute that to faith, even if they attribute that to Islam, it doesn't necessarily mean that it is such. Okay, as wise people, as people of intellect, we have got to go and do a bit of research and look into it and see if it's actually there, or they're just claiming it's there. Okay. I remember this, I think he was a priest, I'm not 100% sure. I met this faithful Christian in Houston, Texas this last December, I think it was, Mark Glenn. And he was saying after 9/11, when he saw all of what's being said about Muslims, he said, you know, I really have to look into this. And he said, after I looked into it, I started actually going around and telling people, look, these are not Muslims. Like, Islam does not teach this type of ideology.
Excuse me, please. Can I
after the, if it's okay, there's going to be an extensive Q&A, and please cut me off when you have to, because I'm not sure in terms of the timing, Brother Mehdi. Some of the general guidelines with regards to the Islamic faith that I'd like to focus on is this, that Islam looks at the universe, the entire creation, in a particular way. In other words, the way it sees the universe, the way it sees us, the way it sees God, right? It makes a huge difference in how it is going to instruct us to live better lives. Okay, let me use an example that someone did. I think it was Sheikh Hamza Yusuf that mentioned this example in a conference in Oxford. The example of quantum physics and Newtonian physics, for those who are familiar with them, before they came up with quantum physics, the understanding of the universe based on Newtonian physics was one thing, and then when they looked at it from a different perspective at a much more micro scale, they realized that those principles that had been developed in Newtonian physics didn't really apply at quantum level. Okay, you can't apply Newtonian physics to quantum mechanics. You can't do that. Okay, it doesn't work like that. You have to see the reality of how the universe is at quantum level before you can decide how to manage it at that level. If you want to look at it and only see it at Newtonian level, the way he figured out the law of gravity and what have you, if you want to just look at it from that perspective and tell people how to make decisions at quantum level, okay, then that's not going to work. You're going to have to see it at quantum level and understand it as such, and then prescribe as to how you need to deal with matter at quantum level. Okay. Islam takes a look at the universe and the way it sees the universe, what the origin of it was, where we are, where this is going to end. Is death the end of it? Is it not? What's going to happen afterwards? And what the whole purpose of these 20, 30, 50, 70, 100 years, if we live that long, are? What is the purpose of this? Depending on how we answer the question, how we see this universe, then the type of instructions that are going to be given are going to be drastically different. If you see the world as being something that is limited to matter, then there's a certain set of laws that you're going to have, a certain set of prescriptions that you will prescribe to, for people to live a prosperous life. But if this is just the beginning, if this is not even the life that you are created for, or we are created for, then the types of instructions that we're going to have to need in order to have a prosperous life for the real world after this is going to be very different, or at least it could be very different. All right. And this is where I think it's very important for us to recognize this. Sometimes some Muslim brothers and sisters ask the question, for example, how can we tell those who believe very firmly that if anybody feels that they're homosexual, that, you know, there's something wrong with that. Islamically, we say that that's not something that is acceptable. How do we convince people that this Islamic teaching is something with, it's a teaching with logic? And the response that I have for them is, look, if you don't look at the world the way Islam looks at it, if you don't see the world as a world that originates from God and everything that He has put here is here for a reason, and He is the one that tells us what the purpose of that is, then you're really not going to find any problem with homosexuality. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing inherently or something clearly wrong that I could see and show you, oh, this is the problem. The best thing I could come up with is this documentary called The Demographic Winter that was put together by some scientists in the United States, which shows that some of the change in the culture in the West has led partially, that includes homosexuality and feminism and a few other things that they talked about over there, it has led to the decline of the Western population, okay? That's something that I've watched a few different documentaries on, but it's the result of the Western culture. Okay, so even if you say that, even if you put that forth, a person may turn around and say, okay, I don't care. I really don't care if there is going to be a next generation of human beings or not. Why do I care? I would like to live the way I like to live, and I like to enjoy life the way I want to enjoy it. I don't care if there is another generation or there isn't. Why should I care? So the way you're going to see the universe is going to make a huge difference. Islam has a particular teaching or a particular set of teachings with regards to that that talks about the origin of the universe being God, the purpose of our stay here. And the purpose of our creation is that God wanted to bestow His blessings on us, but He has created us. He has these beings, He has these creatures, He has these creations that receive the blessings without any prerequisite, they can just receive it like angels. They don't need to do anything to receive those blessings. But there's this very profound and lofty blessing that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has that cannot be obtained except through free will, except through a being, a creature, having the choice to do what is right and the choice to do what is wrong, and choosing with their own free will to do what is right. Okay. Only then they're going to be able to receive that. That's the type of blessing this is. So God created the human being for that. This blessing needed to be given. God wants to give all the time. So in order to give this being the greatest blessing that no other creature can receive, God created this universe, which gave us the ability to choose what is right and what is wrong, in order that we make the right choices so He can give us that blessing. And that blessing is actually going to manifest in the fullest form in the life after death. And that's why in the Quran, God tells us that this life is just a game. 7 years, 80 years that you're living here, or we're living here, it's just, in a sense, a game. There's really not much to it. The real joy, the real pleasure, the real life isn't the hereafter. That's going to be eternal. There's no end to that. Okay, and that's what really the human being was created for. Well, this approach is going to change the way many of the teachings and instructions are going to be with regards to life here. I'm very, very sorry. That's why I asked the brother to point to me when the time is over. I apologize sincerely to all the listeners, especially to my friend and colleague here, Dr. Kaif. I will leave the comments for any form of questions that are that would allow me to continue any of that. Thank you very much.